I'm James Dean Bradfield, and this is Inspired by Horror. It feels like I've been hearing the name Victor Horror come out of my speakers since I was 16 years old. From the songs of The Clash, Calexico, and U2, amongst others, I've become captivated by the music and story of Chilean musician Victor Jara. I've made an album called Even in Exile, which is inspired by Jara. I'm not the first artist whose creativity has been fueled by Jara, and I wanted to look deeper at why so many have been influenced by him.
Muchas gracias. This next song is for Victor Jara. For those who fought against injustice and who paid the highest price, even in this building.
I was inspired by what had happened to his life and what he stood for and where he came from and just, you know, standing up all the way until the very end.
The proper protest songs, his, are so heartfelt. It's like there's no rage to them. True activists aren't angry. They're just completely determined and completely sure of themselves.
What I find really striking about Jara is that even with his more kind of aggressive, very topical, very detailed songs, where there's more anger in his voice, it's still quite mellifluous and sort of instantly appealing.
It's not about these small acts of cowardice. It's more about the spirit that he tapped into and how he inspired so many people.
It lifted people up, people who were poor and struggling, or people who were imprisoned, or people who were not seen by the upper class of Chile, not seen by the Pinochets. And Victor did that for Chileans, gave them an identity.
This is the final part of my quest to learn and share a little more about Victor Jara. We've heard from the bands who've told his story and put his name front and center in their work, and the artists outside of music who have also been inspired to create. In this final part, I want to look at Jara, the revolutionary singer, the protest singer, his work and his influence on the genre.
Muy bien, voy a preguntar por ti, por aquel.
Dorian Lynskey writes for The Guardian, The Observer, and Q magazine. He wrote a book called 30 Revolutions Per Minute, a history of protest songs. Dorian has interviewed me lots down the years, but for once, now it is my chance to put some questions to him. In your book, you quote Phil Oakes as saying, "I've just met the real thing." Do you think Victor Jara epitomizes everything a protest singer should and could be?
I think that to people like Phil Oakes, he was, because there was an enormous amount of sort of guilt and self-consciousness for someone like Phil Oakes, because by then you'd had, this was the early 70s, by then you'd had like 10 years since the folk revival and Dylan coming through and Oakes coming through. And you'd had really commercial protest songs, you'd had accusations of hypocrisy. It became quite a good brand, you know, and obviously the idea of, like, protest singers like to think that they're taking a risk, and they often are. But at certain points in history, it actually becomes quite a successful brand. And even people who aren't very political want to be seen to be on the right side and saying something, even if it's something quite vacuous. And that's how Jara felt as well. And he said he didn't even like the phrase protest song. He preferred revolutionary song. And he had this very kind of damning view of North American protest singers as these kind of like pampered, decadent souls. And I think that insecurity existed in people like Oakes. And so you go to a different country with an even more flammable political situation where everything, the stakes are so much higher all around. And you look at somebody like that who is throwing himself fully into the political fight, not just doing the Dylan thing of writing some songs and then backing away because he wants to be an artist, he doesn't want to be an activist. Whereas Jara was like, no, I am an activist artist. That's what I'm here for. And facing real threats of violence, which, you know, Fela Kuti in Nigeria around the same time had as well. And it's just the stakes were so much higher, and you can see why there was that fascination on the part of North Americans with Jara and his contemporaries. But I don't think therefore you can sort of necessarily criticize North Americans for the fact that they weren't at risk of being, you know, incarcerated in a football stadium or executed. It's like different countries create different cultures of protest singing.
I think Hara's reputation rests on his ability to move between two types of protest song. You have Preguntas por Puigdemont, you know, a factual retelling of a grave injustice, and Manifesto, a mission statement, almost a proletarian prayer. It's a rare quality in a singer, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, people do tend to kind of get stuck in, they have a certain kind of voice, they have a certain kind of specialism. What I find really striking about Hara is that even with his more kind of aggressive, very topical, very detailed songs, where there's more anger in his voice, it's still quite mellifluous. And it really made me think that actually in America, Dylan, one of the huge influences that Dylan had was that you would have this kind of edge to your voice, and there would be a certain kind of a sort of barbed humor or a kind of, you know, serrated edge to the way that you sang. And even when Jarvis Bahar has been quite angry, it's very, you can see it's very much in that South America, that Nueva Canción tradition, where it's mellifluous and sort of instantly appealing.
I remember you're in Manifesto for the first time, and it was comparable to you're in Song to the Siren by Tim Buckley for the first time.
Right, yeah.
Its message just floated to you on a raft. I can't think of many protest songs that convey themselves like that, can you?
No, but I like that point you make, because some of them, it's like he's right down on, it's like having a camera and Questions for Puigdemont. He's like on the ground, specifically calling people out and talking about this precise event. You know, like Neil Young's Ohio, where it's about this particular event, and he's not pretending that it isn't. And then with Manifesto, it's like the aerial view, and it becomes one of those songs that can be kind of repurposed. And I suppose there are definitely two kinds of protest songs, some that are very specific, some that are very general. But you don't normally find a songwriter that can kind of cut between the two modes successfully.
There are lots of pictures from this period where Salvatore Allende of standing in front of banners, and he stood in front of one banner that says, "You can't have a revolution without songs." Do you think this is true?
I think it's very... it's a romantic idea, and it's definitely an idea that was true in certain places at certain points in time. And I think Martin Luther King sort of said something similar. It's like you couldn't have the civil rights movement without the songs. And, you know, the Nueva Canción movement is so intertwined with the Latin American left during the 70s. And you had politicians that really valued that. Obviously, Allende really valued having Hara on side. He didn't have to give him these opportunities and sort of bring him in. But then subsequently, I mean, there have been so many movements where you sort of go, well, what was the anthem for the Occupy movement? What is the anthem for Extinction Rebellion? If you go on a march now, you'll hear like the old songs. You'll still hear We Shall Overcome, or you still hear Give Peace a Chance. And so I think that statement was kind of true of Latin America at that point that he said it. And I think maybe that's one of the reasons why Hara's story is so potent, because you have sometimes politicized musicians can feel a little sort of impotent outside their own sort of fan base. They kind of feel, well, am I actually changing things? Does anybody else care? Do these songs, does what I'm saying matter? And I would argue, it does, but it's probably not going to change policy directly. Whereas, you know, in that particular period in Chile, you could go, wow, yeah, this really does help. This can help win an election. This can help kind of lift the morale of a government.
Dorian's right. The Hara influence on his contemporaries in the protest singer movement is as key to his legacy as the lyrical mentions by The Clash or U2. The Welsh singer David Ewan is a political singer in the truest sense, a politician for Plaid Cymru and a folk singer who wrote the song Cán Víctor Jara. When did you first become aware of Víctor Jara and his music?
It was very soon after he was killed. Somebody sent me the book his widow, Joan Jara, wrote about his life. And it's probably one of the books that has had the most profound effect on me, because it is so, I hadn't heard of him really before, and the fact that he had been leading this movement in Chile more or less the same time as we were campaigning for the language in Wales, and there were so many similarities between his songs and our songs, and his wish to get the people of Chile to reconnect with their own history and their own songs and to write their own songs rather than be sort of engulfed in the American US culture. And his whole life was so heroic and so exciting. I felt I had to write about it immediately. And since then, you know, I've felt a great affinity with this great man.
Well, Victor Jara obviously conveyed his feelings for Chilean culture and its people and his ambitions for his own land, but he also reached beyond his own borders, didn't he? He went beyond domestic politics.
I think this is a very important part of Victor Jara's songs and his mission, if you like, because although he was working with his own people in Chile, I wanted them to reconnect with their history and their culture. He was also a man of the world. He was also very much a follower of Ho Chi Minh, and his songs almost sing about Vietnam as if it, they were an extension to Chile. So I felt immediately that we could connect with his message and identify with his songs. Although he was singing about Chile and we were singing about Wales, we could both campaign against the war in Vietnam. So there were all these things which brought us together. And it's quite remarkable how deep an effect he had on people like me.
So you've sung This Land Is Your Land, you know, the Woody Guthrie song under the guise of Mladi Mi. Your song, Ama Ohid, you know, I think has gone beyond its own borders. Now with Victor, his songs are famous in the Spanish-speaking world. You know, he is a hero in the Spanish-speaking world. But do you think any of his songs have gone beyond those borders?
Well, not as much as they should have, perhaps. But songs have a way of traveling the world. And they do so through other people, through singers picking up songs and adapting them, sometimes translating them and singing them. And this happens, for instance, with children's songs. We found over the years, recording children's songs in Welsh, found that many of them have emanated from other countries and other cultures and have traveled the world. Sailors' songs, they carried songs all over the world. So there is a strange way songs can permeate and take years to reach perhaps a new destination. The songs of Victor Jara obviously communicated in Chile itself. Now, I've met many Chileans who were forced to leave their country after Pinochet, and many of them settled in Wales. There's quite a large Chilean community in Swansea, for instance, and some of them have singing groups, and I've heard some of them sing the songs of Victor Jara, and they obviously love those songs. To us, I mean, his style of singing was very soft and tender. He wasn't a raucous protest singer in any shape or form, but he obviously had a way with words as well. But the great thing about people like him and Woody Guthrie are the same. He was a very political animal, but rooted in his own country, but his songs very often have a message to the world.
Messages which inspired his own people in Chile and which reached a wider horizon. And yet delivered in a soft, as Dorian says, mellifluous voice. The ability to write honest, lyrical and personal poetic content despite the political climate has fascinated many. Holly Near is an American protest singer who has collaborated with Chilean instrumental group Inter Illimani. Holly has spent time with Victor's wife Joan and has included a verse about Victor in her 1974 song, It Could Have Been Me.
For freedom I can too. The junta took the fingers from Victor Jara's hands. They said to the gentle poet, play your guitar now if you can. Well, Victor started singing until they shot his body down. You can kill a man, but not a song, when it's sung the whole world around, and it could have been me.
It's always interesting to ask the singer or the author of the song, do they know the effect their song has had? Because your song, It Could Have Been Me, has a real reputation amongst protest singing circles. Are you aware of its power, of its reputation? And can you explain to us why there is a verse about Victor Jara in there?
I was asked by one of the survivors of a historic event in the United States, which took place at Kent State University in Ohio. And the National Guard was sent in to break up a demonstration. And the National Guard shot into the crowd and killed the several students. One of the survivors, Dean Kaler, asked me if for the memorial the following year, if I would come to Ohio and would I write a song about the Kent State event. I was on the airplane flying and still hadn't written the song. I just thought, what's wrong with me? Everything I wrote was garbage. It was rhetorical, and it was just, I didn't like what I was writing. So I remember sitting on the plane and saying to myself, okay, you have to personalize this. What is this story about? What are you trying to say? I mean, it shouldn't be that hard. They were students. They were there on campus. They were protesting against the invasion of Cambodia. And it could have been me. So what do you want to say here in the song? And then I backed up a minute and I went, oh, it could have been me. And the song just, you know, by the time I landed in Ohio, I had several verses. And what I wanted the song to be, which I think has always been important to me for songs like this, is for them to be workhorses, for them to be a chorus that then can go out into the world and anybody for any struggle can write a verse that wraps back around to the chorus. So one of the verses was about the students at Kent State and then Jackson State, which were Black students that were similarly shot in the U.S. There was a verse about Victor Jara, who had been killed. So these verses have just come forward. And I kind of let the song go. It has a life of its own.
There's a song on our record called Without Knowing the End, which is about Joan. Now, I know that you befriended Joan and you spent time with her and you know her. I'd like to ask you, is she as strong in that kind of graceful, tacit way that she always seems to me, whether it be in a picture or whether it just be reading her book or reading an interview with her? You know, is she that discreet tower of strength that I imagine her to be?
And more so. She is an extraordinarily grounded woman. And who knows, you know, she was a ballerina. When she came to Chile, she danced, and she, I imagine that she and Victor fell in love with each other, but also with their artistry. You know, there is that tingle of someone who dares to be creative in public. You know, it's not natural. And she lands like a dancer would land, you know, she is, and she has that grace. I felt that from the time I met her. But the other part, not to romanticize her, is this sucks. Women who have famous partners who get murdered, whether it's Martin Luther King's wife or Malcolm X's wife or Victor Jara's wife, you are for the rest of your life a famous widow. And you carry Allende's wife. I mean, these people who are Mandela. I mean, you can go through a list and list of these women who carry that, the power, the essence, the history, the integrity, of these men in their lives who were killed. Obviously, she's moved on, but not without Victor. Victor has been with her the whole time. It was the book she wrote. It was in the Victor Jara Center that she created in Chile. It was in her continuous battle to make sure that his death was acknowledged by the Chilean government, that it was a murder, and to find who it was that murdered him, which in fact, after all these years, they have. She is an extension, not so much of the man, because she was very much an independent woman, but an extension of the history, the lack of justice, the horror of what happened to hundreds and hundreds of people in Chile. And she never separated herself from that larger picture. She said, this is not just about Victor because he was a famous singer, actor, director, and my husband. This is about all of the people in Chile who were murdered, were imprisoned, were tortured, were the desaparecidos, you know? And she was carried that story with a lot of dignity. And how hard that must have been. I was in England at the time she was working on the book, and I stopped by to visit her, and she came to the door, and she just looked spent. And she said, I just finished writing the chapter about Victor's death. We went in and we had tea, and we didn't talk very much. And then I gave her a big hug and left, because she was in the middle of trying to tell this story, and has carried that all her life. And I admire her so much. I hope that she'll be able to have some years in the end of her life, having found the killers, having followed this through, that she will have some peace.
Joan Jara was Victor's wife, a ballet dancer in her own right, and a teacher. Her book, An Unfinished Song, is perhaps the most important source of information about Victor and Chile in this period. In our song, Without Knowing the End, we wanted to convey the conviction of the physical act that Joan always seems to stand for. Without knowing the end, I am and I will be. Whether it be teaching ballet to working class children in Chile, their feet bleeding on the asphalt as they learn, helping to inspire Christopher Bruce's ballet, Ghost Dance, returning to Chile to live after the murder of Victor, her husband, always walking it, dancing it, writing it, like Victor sang it. This life I had to defend. The true political, which Dorian was talking about, is the impact of inspiring people to enter politics. Not just as an art form, but as a career choice. The Cardiff West MP, Kevin Brennan, is a perfect example of this. How old were you when you became aware of Victor Jara, Allende, and the subsequent Pinochet coup?
I actually remember watching the TV news in September 1973 when I was a 13-year-old growing up in Cumbran, and the news came through of the coup against Allende in Chile, and it just really angered me. You know, they described it. I remember them describing it on the news as the first ever democratically elected Marxist government in the world. And the idea then that the army would come in, as we subsequently found out, with, you know, CIA involvement from America and so on, and brutally overthrow this democratically elected government with a left-wing leader, was one of the big things that radicalized me as a teenager and really made me motivated about politics. So that's when I first heard about, Allende and Chile, really. And it was subsequent to that when stories came through about what had happened to Victor Jara that I became more aware of him and his music. And as a kid growing up in Cumbran, playing the guitar, 13 years old, hearing what happened to a folk singer being brutally murdered, in Santiago Stadium like that, I remember writing a song about it at the time. You know, it really, really angered me what had happened. And I think it was after that then that I got involved more actively in politics. And I joined the Young Communist League. I joined the anti-apartheid movement, got involved with the anti-Nazi League and so on. And thereafter, when I was 16, went interrailing with my mate, Di George, from Cumbran. And we stayed with this family in Denmark who I'd met on holiday the year before. And they had Victor Jara records in their record collection. Because unlike now, you couldn't just access the music by going on the internet. It was, you know, not immediately accessible. That was the first time properly that I actually heard the music of this figure I'd heard all about, when the coup happened in Chile.
I think I approached Victor Jara from a different direction to you. I was kind of aware of Chilean politics leading up to my teenage years, but I remember my mum talking about Pinochet being the perfect bedfellow for Margaret Thatcher because, you know, my mother was quite political and she didn't like either of those people, obviously. So I was aware of his life, I was aware of the politics, I was aware of the landscape that was inherent in talking about Victor Jara and Chile. But I didn't really become aware of his music, the breadth of his music catalogue until about 3 years ago. I knew a few songs. I knew Manifesto, which I was always impressed by, but I never came across Victor Jara albums when I was out shopping or anything. And it all feels so pre-internet when I first heard about Victor Jara. But when I finally did get to hear a lot of his music, I couldn't believe how empathetic his music was, how inclusive it was. It really shocked me that a protest singer could actually be like this instead of being square on and confrontational. Is that your impression of him too when you first got into his music?
Yeah, I think that's true. I think there's a some do, but they don't sort of smash you over the head with a message always. There's a very subtle lyricism, I think, to the way that Victor Jara writes. It's very poetic. In a way, it feels like a sort of, you know, South American, Latin American kind of poetic approach towards politics. And the song I remember from the first time I ever heard this record in Denmark, of all places, when I was interrailing, was a song called Ni Chicha Ni Lemona. And it's basically a song about, you know, you're neither strong drink, you know, or sweet lemonade, you know, you're nothing, you know, because if you don't actually, if you sit on the fence all your life, you know, if you and you know, you have that attitude towards life, then you're nothing. And I just thought the imagery of that is a cracking tune as well, by the way, you know, it's a really brilliant sort of up-tempo tune. But I just thought that was such a clever use of imagery to get a political message across. So I think that's right. There is a very subtle lyricism to Victor Jara's songs.
Whilst I was recording this album, I did try to, you know, attempt to cover some of Victor's songs. But his words just made my voice redundant. It just didn't work out. I couldn't do it. And I think that's the moral of the story. You know, you let somebody like Victor inspire you, but be at your peril if you try to follow in his footsteps for obvious reasons. But also, you can't live up to his bravery. You can't live up to his grace. You can't live up to his influence. But you can try and live up to his standards, can't you?
I think that is a very astute observation, because I think, you know, if I think of politicians that would have inspired me to get involved in politics, the obvious one, and it's absolutely true, would be Nyrin Bevan, although he, you know, died as I was being born, but the legacy of it and looking back at his speeches. But if you try to emulate, you know, Nyrin Bevan's speeches or his approach, you know, you'd be dangerously, going towards parody. And I think with Victor Jara's songs, I think one thing you said that is right is there is a kind of almost, you know, religious element to the songs, a softness about them. Maybe that's something to do with the fact that, you know, he did for a time spend some time in the seminary. There is a strong link, you know, between liberation theology, you know, and Catholicism, and helping the poor, and, you know, left-wing political movements, particularly in South America. And I think that's subtly woven into his music, which does make it difficult to reproduce and to cover. And that's why you're right that it's really a springboard, you know, for inspiration to write your own material, you know, that's related to it. And I think that does equally translate into politics. You shouldn't try to just, you know, copy your political heroes. You've just got to use them as the inspiration. And the bottom line is, you know, Victor Hara is about help the weak against the strong. Nye Bevan was about help the weak against the strong. It almost boils down to something as simple as that. And how do you convey that message, you know, in a meaningful way to people?
The man whose lyrics combine with my music on the album is the poet and playwright Patrick Jones. I've known Pat since I was 16. I've been in a band with his brother Nick since 1985. Patrick and I have spent just over 2 years working on this album. Sunday nights, drinking tea and eating toast in his house, condensing our thoughts and looking into the history of Hara. So Pat, ever since I've known you, you've always fed me new books and new poems. And as a writer yourself, you've never been shy to admit that you're greatly influenced by other writers, whether it be Fitzgerald or Whitman or Kerouac. But even with this, you seem to be inspired beyond anything I'd seen before. That first Sunday where you showed me this reams of poetry and prose, and it was almost like a one-man play, some Beckett-esque kind of a one-man play that you were trying to write about Victor Hara too. What inspired such an explosion of writing just about one person?
Yeah, I think it was the sort of the tragedy and the sadness of the end of Victor Hara's life that really hit home to me, the power of what he had created. And that took me back to the beginning, to where he started with such a pure belief in the power and beauty of song, juxtaposed to the way it ended under such oppression and a martial rule in Chile, just made me realize what a journey he had gone on, and the country and the people who he was writing for, and how it ended. So I just felt I had to, a phrase that Albert Camus has always stayed with me, about bearing witness. And I thought, I really didn't know that much about Victor Hara, and yet that story needs to be told. So then I went back to the beginning and how he started in theater, how he went off into the marginalized communities and villages collecting folk songs. Who he was influenced by another songwriter, Violeta Parra, and because he didn't want them to die. So he would collect these folk songs, bring them back and perform them in clubs in Santiago. So it was Victor Hara's, I suppose, his voice, what he stood for, alongside all these different ripples that he was involved with, from theatre to inspiring younger singer-songwriters, to marching in the streets, how he combined, you know, revolutionary thought with practical acts of resistance, with just the beautiful aesthetics of writing a song, which then he would perform and which would touch people. There was just so many things that really, alongside him just being a family man, if that makes any sense, dealing with these huge societal issues. I just felt I just needed to, know more about this person that I never really heard that much of, apart from bands like Calexico, U2, David Ewan, Bruce Springsteen, referencing Victor Hara. And once I started this journey of finding out these snippets of his life, I just knew there was so much to say about his journey of life, and in a way of what his legacy was 50 years down the line as we looked at the world today. So I just found him just an inspirational character, combining everyday life with huge artistic statements, which just inspired me, really.
I hope you enjoyed the 3 episodes explaining Victor's legacy. Hopefully, this is a small reward for listening. This is a track I didn't finish in time for inclusion on the album, so you won't hear it anywhere else. This is called Versus Echo with Tear Flow.
slave.